I think I'm supposed to get started, right? 8:30. Good morning. Thank you for showing up this early. And it's cold in here. Right. So my name is Clicker. I need a clicker. Here it is. My name is Alan Mius. I work in the Unified Windows Group at Microsoft. And I'm my focus is on has been on Windows Phone for the last 5 years, and I've always been focusing around enterprise capabilities. It has been a journey, as some of you may know if you follow Windows Phone, and enterprise capabilities. So I think we are making a big step forward with Windows Phone 8.1, and this morning I'm just going to do a deep dive into the mobile device management and app management capabilities for the phone itself, go through how it works and all the policies and all that kind of stuff. I don't mind taking questions during the sessions at all. Actually, I love it. I will ask for questions if you don't ask me questions. And then we'll see how we manage time. I need to manage time because we need to be done in 75 minutes. So 73 left. Let's get going. When we look at Windows Phone 8.1, the release has a number of enterprise capabilities that cover things such as the ability for users to collaborate and work with each other, Office, Outlook, Skype, Link, those kind of things. Not really going to talk about that today. Obviously, enterprise VPN and Wi-Fi is a part now of Windows Phone. I'll talk about how to configure it from an MDM perspective. S/MIME, I'll cover that. How many of you are using S/MIME? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. Enough of you to talk about it. And then Cortana. You ones who were at the keynote or some other sessions may have heard it talking, although it's a female voice. Obviously, we're going to talk a lot about enhanced mobile device management, somewhat about the converged app platform, certificate management, all those kind of things. So basically, this is what I'll be covering. Enterprise mobile device management, the enrollment, configuration set, certificate management, application management from an MDM perspective, monitoring, user assistance, those kind of things. I'll go through the full life cycle. I'll show you in a minute. I'll specifically talk also about secure access on Windows Phone with Wi-Fi and VPN. And then I'll cover Exchange support, and that's where we'll touch on S/MIME and additional enterprise or EAS policies that we now cover on Windows Phone and give you overviews and tables and those kind of things of policies and talk about certain policies because it's important to understand how they work together sometimes, specifically the newer ones as such. I have too many phones here that I can demo it. So 8. I just connected a Windows Phone with the USB cable to a Surface here. There is a tool on the download center at Microsoft that you can look for, screen sharing tool, right? If you have a phone and you have updated it to the developer's preview or the, as we call it, you can download the tool and you can do exactly what I do here, show the your screen on a PC screen. With some devices like this one. This is a 930. It's not in the market yet. So this one supports Miracast. So if you have Wi-Fi and a Miracast dongle, you can actually share it directly from the phone wireless to any screen that that you can connect to, right? They come in nice colors. We also have green and yellow and so forth. So going back to the presentation. So when we talk about mobile device management, we have had mobile device management in Windows Phone for a while. The mobile device management stack is shared across the Windows devices. So Windows 8 Pro, Enterprise, those queues, right, the Intel-based queue, as well as Windows RT, as well as Windows Phone, actually have the same mobile device management client built in. And it's based on OMADM standard. Specifically, it's SyncML 1.2, if you want to know. So it's a really little part of the OMADM standard. The way it works, it's a protocol. It's not an API. The client on the device connects with the server. They set up a session, and they send back and forth XML. That's what it does. The XML sent by the server to the client configures the client or instructs the client to make changes on the device, and the client sends results back in an XML format to the server. Most MDM vendors today, including Windows Intune, Mobile Iron, AirWatch, SOTI, FiberLink, Citrix, and I'm missing a number of Symantec, SOTOS, I'm missing a number of them. And my apologies if any of you work for these companies that I didn't mention, support Windows MDM at this point in time to certain degrees, etc. Implementation is somewhat different in the way it looks and feels, but it's all based on this one protocol. All MDM vendors write to this one protocol and enable configuration, etc., of the device through this protocol. Again, with Windows 8.1, we're just building and extending support for what this OMADM client on the device can do. And specifically, what is important here is that we also have added push capabilities. In other ways, since this is a protocol-based, usually the device connects to the server and sets up a session. That's how it is on Windows Phone 8.0. On Windows Phone 8.1, the server can connect to the device and set up a session. To do that, the server uses cloud push services in the Microsoft cloud. It registers an instance of the MDM into the cloud, creates a unique push notification channel for that instance that it can connect to its known devices with. So it will send a notification to the device, and as a result of that notification, the device will connect with the server, the channel will be set up, and they can send back and forth XML files. That's how it technically works in the background. Question? How reliable and how fast is the push notification? Really reliable and really fast. And the reason you asked that question probably is because it wasn't with Windows Phone 8.0. There was a lot of feedback we got from not just MDM vendors, but others, and it also shows in some applications that use push notification services. But with the release of 8.1, we really have focused at making push really reliable and responsive. So you can have a set up a session within seconds with a device, right? As long as the device obviously is awake and on the network available as such. So yeah, it's a really good question. How robust and responsive is it? Very responsive. It was a really big thing for us to work at that, to make sure that you can really quickly reach out to a device. You don't have to wait minutes. It's in seconds that you set up a connection. Another, was there another question? Thank you. Another big thing that we are doing with Windows 8.1 is we are extending the reach of the mobile device management client to much more of the capabilities within the operating system. And what I mean with that is that you can now configure accounts, and you can configure much more on the device, not just policies, but also profiles of certain capabilities like email and Wi-Fi and VPN, etc., which is a big extension. Plus, we also use push in application management to make sure that you can push applications to the device very responsively, individually, etc. So we also make a lot of advances there. So big things in MDM here, right, from a higher level perspective is push and is the ability to manage a larger collection of things on the device. And I'll go through all that in a minute or in the next 75, somewhat minutes. So what I'll do, I'll go through the full life cycle: enrollment, policies, app management, asset management like inventory and user assistant, and then unenrollment or retirement of a device. I'll go through the full life cycle so you have a good idea of what happens at what stage or what you can do at what stage, so to speak. So let's start with enrollment. First things first, enrollment in 8.0 was not easy. And the reason I'm saying that is we had an MDM client on the device that MDM vendors use. Most MDM vendors have some app. If you look at the way it's done on an iPhone, you download an app, and the app actually uses an API on the device to set and configure the device, right? That's how it usually works. And the paradigm was kind of blocking a lot of MDM servers and users because they still had an app for Windows Phone 8.1, and you needed to download the app very often. And I work with the internal client and the app from the MDM vendor and copy-paste, those kind of things. Very annoying to a lot of users. So what we have done is we have enabled the MDM vendor to interrupt the enrollment process, so to speak, capture that process in a secure way so they can present the user with sufficient information and asks to enable the user to easily enroll within in the MDM server without having to download an app. Obviously, at the end of the enrollment, an app can still be downloaded for other purposes, like presenting a catalog of apps that belong to the company or any other IT services that may surface in this company portal, as the Intune team calls it, their app that is downloaded automatically when you enroll a device. The system is very flexible because it enables you to create your own process, so to speak, for enrollment. It enables you to interfere and ask the user for specific information, present them with a contract they need to sign because it's a bring your own scenario, and they need to say, yes, I allow you to manage my device to a certain extent. Those kind of things, you need to be able to present that to the user as such, right? I'm going to take that central nest questions first. Can you repeat the question? Can you provision what specifically? Yes. Can you pre-provision a device for the user? Is that your question? They always say to me, don't say no when somebody asks a question. So let's see. Oh, not really. No, and it's a good question though, right? If you have, if you're rolling out, let's say 25,000 phones, I hope you do, Windows phones, then you may want to pre-configure these devices to a certain extent, right? At this point in time, we don't have that capability to offer you.
Will it be next year?
I can't give you timelines. Is it something we're thinking about? Sure, we're thinking about it. We get the question. Did you have the same question?
Yeah.
All right, yes. We have gotten this question a few times. So yeah, we're thinking about how to enable bulk enrollment or bulk provisioning of a device to a certain extent so the user can quickly get to it. Now, I would like to, let's see on what device, show you a few things here. So this is an enrolled device with a super secret passcode. I always use on all these demo devices the same passcode, but anyway. So this is a managed device, right? It is enrolled. If I go into the management client here, workspace, you can see it's enrolled in Contoso Corporation, right? It's connected to this server as such. The way I usually enroll, and I'll show you in a minute, maybe, well, I'll show you now, right, is I would go to this client and type in my email address, right, like we, like this, and I'll show you it on the device, and then the device would automatically go and discover where is the MDM server for the user. To bring the user to this place, you can obviously use other tools like, for example, this one. And you're free to use the URL. It's in the bottom here, right? It's just a web page. It's on the internet. And it's developed by some Microsoft employee, right? But if you do enroll phone, it will automatically go to the workplace setting. So you don't have to explain the user. You can integrate that in an enrollment process. So first, you can initiate enrollment to make it easier by providing the users just a HTML email or a HTML page. They go to, they click the button, and up, they're there. Of course, this device is already enrolled, but normally I would land on this page and have to enter my identity of some kind, right? At this point in time, as you see on this, not on this screen, on this screen, right? I would enter, I would arrive here, I would enter my identity. This identity, excuse me, this domain is used with domain name services to discover where in the, on the internet the enrollment server is. It connects to the enrollment server, it does an authentication. Authentication can be very wide. You can do a phone number or a one-time PIN code or whatever you want to do. Because the authentication page is going to be an HTML page that is provisioned by the MDM server, right? It presents the HTML page to the user. It can have buttons or next or whatever, ask the user for things, ask the user for acknowledgement of a contract, etc., and then finish the enrollment process. So it does this type of screen and then presents the user, this is an HTML page. This is the Microsoft employee page for enrollment. Microsoft asks us our user ID, email address basically, and our password, and that it is, that's it, right? But you can ask all kinds of things. You can have multiple pages and go next, 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 and or simple, whatever you want to do. It's up to you. It's very flexible. Once the enrollment server is satisfied with the information provided by the user, it will enroll the device. Right? Enrollment of the device means it will put a user certificate on the device to authenticate the device and the user against the MDM server. Because that is the next step the device will take. It will connect to the MDM server provided by the enrollment service and try to authenticate and then go into the next step, configure the device. Right? Obviously, once the device is enrolled and connects to your MDM server, whatever ones you use, you can have some kind of, excuse me, triage of what is happening, right? Who is this user? Is it really this user? What am I going to do with him? What group does he belong to? All those kind of things. And then apply policies, etc. Or download an app. So the next thing, big thing is I'm going to configure the device, right? And to configure the device, I can put a profile onto the device that configures emails. Excuse me. Okay. That configures emails, that configures certificates, route up to user certificate, that brings down network profiles for Wi-Fi and VPN, etc. A company portal or an app from the MDM vendor or your apps and all the line of business apps that are required for these users and all obviously configures a number of policies. This set can be brought down to the device in once. You have a question? Good question. Application install is silent, right, at this point and at any point unless you pop up something, a toast or so, to the user for taking a certain action. So applications are really installed in the background. The user doesn't see anything really happening as such, right? So let's see if I have an unenrolled phone somewhere. This one is enrolled. This one too. Anyway, I have too many enrolled phones. So this phone was enrolled in the MDM server that we just showed you, right? Workspace, Contoso Corporation. And as a result of that, I have a few applications here. The field engineering app, the financial services app. I have a Fabricam email configured. I have a Contoso email configured, so it configured two email accounts on this device. And it set a number of policies, brought them down to the device silently after the actual enrollment. This is how it could look like. In some devices, you could have a company portal installed on the device. For example, let me try to switch to this device here. This enrollment has another profile. Let's try to see if it connects. Yep. Right. It is also enrolled in a different server. Microsoft IT server, actually, right? This is a Microsoft employee enrollment, and it has a company portal, right? An MDM app. As an, this is an Intune instance. The only thing you get here is a catalog of applications. So it authenticates to a cloud service. I'm not going to show you my real password at Microsoft. So I authenticated against the cloud service. And hopefully we have good connection. And there it is. So it opens the Microsoft IT cloud or company portal, right? It tells me that I have three devices enrolled at this point in the Microsoft MDM Intune environment. Gives me some information of Microsoft IT, how to contact them, and then shows me all these apps that I can install that are all Microsoft line of business apps used by Microsoft employees, right? Like Campus Live, and I can do the Campus Experience app. It's kind of a virtual reality app. You can walk around on a campus and point your camera around, and it will say, this is building 35, and this is building 5, those kind of things, right? And install apps on the device. That's what I do right now, directly from the catalog. So in this case, it's a different method. It's not applications are pushed to my device. Microsoft says, please enroll. If you enroll, you get all these applications from Microsoft. You get access. It's a pull mechanism from an employee. It's a different policy, a different setup, depending on the company that you work for and how you work with it. So after enrollment, emails are, everything is configured on the device that the user can now use. Obviously, you can configure the device with policies. Before I go into that, something unique to Windows Phone is assigned access. Assigned access is something that if you know a Windows embedded environment, handheld embedded tools, etc., for ruggedized devices, you may have heard about assigned access. What you see is convergence here. So the embedded tools are actually converging into the Windows OS as such, and Windows Phone has some of the functionality that you would find in an embedded environment. Assigned access enables you to configure the device precisely as you want. If it's a corporate-owned device that is being used by a set of users, and you want to tightly configure and manage that device, assigned access is the way to go. Assigned access allows you, on top of all the policies and the profiles that I just talked to, and I'll give you more details about, it also allows you to configure the start screen, to say, these are the tiles on the start screen, this is the size of the tiles, this is the color of the tiles, right, that are on the start screen. If you swipe to the left, you see all the apps. You can hide all the apps in there that you want to hide for the user. If you go into the settings screen, you can hide all the settings you want to hide for the user. So you limit the user to only seeing that what you want to see. The tiles on the start screen, what apps are available for him to use, what settings he has available to configure. So you have complete control over the device in combination with the policies that you set on the device. Typical use cases could be, well, that's how we are. Our policy is to tightly manage devices, right? Or things like a retail point of sale environment where you want to be able to provide the retail associate with a specific application or a few applications to be able to help the customers in the store and then finalize a deal by swiping a credit card or something like that. Or the Brazilian Census Bureau in Brazil gives out phones to send census agents to go around and do the survey, count people, count where they live and how many rooms they have, and those kind of things, right? To collect all that kind of information, they just need one application, being able to make a call to make appointments or call into the office, those kind of things, but that is limited to what they do. So often this is a task-oriented environment, or it is an environment where you say, we want really tightly control the experience on the device itself. So you can hide games, you can hide anything that is built in on the device itself, so that the user doesn't have access to any of that. In terms of configuration management, we have a large set of policies, and I'll show them all at once. But we start with device lock. We already had that, right? You put policies on the device to lock the device, so the password is set on the device, and users need to log in or log into the device. It's always locked. Obviously, that goes with a remote wipe and wipe threshold. So, how many times does a user or a finder enter the wrong password before the device is wiped, etc.? So, it's important security measures. We have a number of restrictions from a hardware perspective, such as disable the camera or disable Wi-Fi, disable NFC. Did I put disable Cortana on there too? Yeah, it's all the way at the right side. So you can also disable Cortana if it's not allowed within the company. But so you can manage some of these hardware restrictions with policies. And then you can configure storage. You can configure internal encryption using the BitLocker environment on Windows Phone, on all Windows devices, turn it on. You can disallow an SD card, and you can also disable USB sync, right? You can connect the phone as a USB drive to a PC or other host and then put files onto the phone. When you do that, you won't see documents that are already stored on the phone, for example, but you may want to disable that type of USB sync. Yes? Can you manage Wi-Fi with it? Yes. As you can see on the left, the lower side, there are some Wi-Fi policies, and I'll go into the Wi-Fi configuration because it's more extended than just the policies as such, as well as the VPN side. Other question?
The password expiration, can you force so we do a 90-day password reset, can you do that, not just expiring, but just requirements?
Well, if it expires, they will have to redo the password.
So
You can, as we said, Wi-Fi and VPN configure it. I'll dive into more details about that specifically. For app management, I'll have a few slides on it too. But you can do app allow and disallow list. In other words, you can say, I'm going to create a list of apps that are allowed that can be stored or installed on the device from the store versus apps that are not stored on the device. Important to see that if you create an allow list, you don't have to create a disallow list, right? The moment you create an allow list on the device, it means only those apps can be installed. All the other ones will not be available for the user to install, and the other way around. If you blacklist, all the other ones are automatically whitelisted. You can completely disable the store too, if you prefer that the users don't install any applications. Question?
Yeah, category-based blacklist, like for cloud-based apps, or is
The whitelist and blacklist, I didn't hear, but the question is, I think, is the whitelist and blacklist, what criteria can be used to do that? Is that the question?
Can it be done by category?
No, yeah. Yeah, no. So, no, that cannot be done. It has to be done on publisher name or app ID. You have to specifically select the apps that you want to block. You cannot say all apps that, I don't know, have access to texting, for example, as a category. You cannot do that. Or all apps that are games. Obviously, for data protection, we'll talk more about SMIME and IRM. If you really want a corporate lockdown with assigned access, you can also completely disable the Microsoft account on the device. So the live ID, just disable it so that it cannot be configured on the device, and the user cannot do any of the consumer things that are associated with the live ID. Is there a question? Oh, sorry. Yes.
So a certificate
of the user that logged on, or a certificate of the device? It's a device certificate, yes.
What about certificate management as far as
Yes, and I'll talk about it in specifically. Your question is around certificate management and how does it work on Windows Phone and what can you do and those kind of things, right? It's a good question. I'll cover it in one of the next slides as such. Yes. So you can also disable a number of data leak policies if you want, right, like copy and paste, screenshots, etc. Disable those. Those are global policies. Those are not specific to a certain app. They are global to the device. If you enable, disable, or if you disable copy and paste will be disabled across the full device. It will not be available in any application or in any way as such, right? It's a global policy. There are also policies to disable document sharing, so documents cannot leak, it cannot be stored on Dropbox or OneDrive, those kind of things. I'll give you an example of that, as well as Save As, and what the implications are for that in terms of documents, office documents. This applies just to office documents, not to anything else that has a Save As type of functionality, like a photo editor app that you can install on the phone, for example, right? That policy will not work on that one. And then from an MDM perspective, you can disable or any function to leave the MDM. If it's a really hardcore, they need to stay in the MDM. You can disable unenrollment. You can disable hardware resetting. You can disable software reset of the device on the local level. So people cannot reset their phone in any way. And cannot leave the MDM. They'll always be connected to the MDM. So more details on storage configuration. At this point in time, obviously, we do encrypt the full internal storage of the device. We do not encrypt the SD card, right? We don't have a policy to enable encryption of the SD card, not in MDM and not in EAS. So if you turn on that policy, SD card needs to be encrypted in EAS, for example, the device will stop syncing email as such. However, what do we do? We do enable the encryption of applications on the SD card. With Windows Phone 8.1, you can install applications on the SD card, and when you do, the partition or the store for that application as well as the data of that application will automatically be encrypted. There's no policy to turn that on or off. It will always be there for the user. It's also important for consumers that when they put applications on the SD card that their data is actually well protected because an SD card can obviously be removed from a device. pictures or music or videos, media files on an SD card will not be encrypted. They will be in a non-encrypted FAT partition on an SD card. They can be used in another device to transfer pictures, for example. Right? The other device will see the non-encrypted partition. It will not see the actual encrypted applications that are on the SD card. An SD card, when an application is installed on the phone, will be automatically and uniquely paired with the device that installs the applications on the SD card, right? And no other host can read those applications or see those applications. Only the original host has the right key to have a look at those partitions on the SD card itself. Yes? How are they not app data? it's a thin line to walk, and maybe a philosophical answer. Most of those are consumer data. Obviously, they are handled by an app, right? I mean, the photo app will handle the pictures, etc. And in an enterprise environment, it's, I think the important thing is pictures mostly, not music, etc. But they're obviously app data. They're handled by the phone, and usually they're handled by the OS itself and are put in a shared environment, because pictures, music, and video are always stored in a shared container, so to speak, right, that other apps have access to. And in that sense, right. So if you have an app that stores data on the SD card, it's installed on the SD card, it has a container there, it stores data on it, all that will automatically be encrypted. Does that answer your question? All right, thank you. So certificate management, you referred to it earlier, right? On the phone, you can we do certificate management using SCEP. SCEP can be used through the MDM environment, and usually it is. The MDM initiates a certificate request to your CA and puts then, and then has the CA put the certificate on the device, or provisions the certificate itself to the MDM. It's going to be different by MDM and actually also by customer, I believe, depending on how you want to set it up, right? But usually, SCEP will automatically manage the certificates once the MDM has initiated the certificate request, and then SCEP will enroll and renew and revoke certificates as such as needed on the device. It can be root up to user certificate and to enable your own certificate management if you want. Certificates can be used for authentication. As I said, at the initial enrollment, a certificate will be put on the device to authenticate the device. The same certificate can be used as a user authentication certificate if you want to, but it doesn't have to, right? And you can have multiple authentication certificates on the device used by multiple servers, depending on how you want to configure this within your infrastructure. You can use it to authenticate against Exchange, with EPTLS, Wi-Fi, VPN authentication. Internet Explorer can use it to set up secure sessions within Internet Explorer that are authenticated against an intranet server of some kind, or an internet server, and line of business applications can use it too. They have access to it. Yes? Yes. Right. I was just going to talk about that. So the device obviously has a protected certificate store on the device. And when you enroll a device into an MDM server, the MDM server will create a unique or in a private store for certificates provisioned through the MDM server. Right. So when you provision certificates on the device, they will be in your private certificate store. That is part of the overall certificate store, but You will be only your apps, only your services that you configure through your MDM, your line of business apps, for example, that are coming through this MDM and are signed with your enterprise certificate. Only those will have access to your enterprise certificate, right? If you then install, I don't know, WhatsApp, it won't be able to go and use your certificates to do something with it. We do have advanced certificate management APIs to enable you to do additional certificate protection if you want, right? So we have a TPM and you can protect the certificates, associate them with the TPM so they become unexportable on the device at all, right? So which means they cannot be used on any other device. They're unique to that device and tied to the user and the device itself, as well as advanced certificate management capabilities for S/MIME. If you're using S/MIME, you have a database of encryption certificates because they need to be distributed to multiple endpoints. And SCEP does not support archiving of encryption certificates, right? So we have a separate API for that to enable you to write an application or work with the MDM vendor. Many companies using S/MIME already have some certain structure to do that, so to speak, and then retrieve encryption certificates from your database and put them on the device so the user is using the same encryption certificate on all the devices. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to, or she wouldn't be able to read email on multiple devices, right? Because the email is encrypted. And we also support virtual smart card for only S/MIME and web browsing at this point in time. A virtual smart card means that the user will be presented with a PIN code to unlock the certificate before they can use it to sign or encrypt an S/MIME email, or before they can use it to set up a secure browsing session with a intranet server. Obviously, the browsing session can be embedded in an application, but it is the browser only who can do it at this point in time. Do you have a question? So virtual smart card is not supported for VPN at this point in time. That is your question, right? Yeah. So the VPN with dual factor authentication is something you're looking at, and you want to do it with virtual smart card. Not at this point in time. Something we're thinking hard about. Yes. Did I answer all your questions about certificates? You did? Thank you. In terms of enterprise Wi-Fi, we, I should say, finally have EPTLS, which enables you to do secure authentication over Wi-Fi with certificates. It's a very wide requirement as such. You have a number of policies to configure the Wi-Fi and to manage the Wi-Fi as such, right? First of all, Wi-Fi profiles can be provisioned by an MDM server to the device. And that includes, you can set which SSIDs they can access or what authentication method will be used by SSID, if they can add their own Wi-Fi networks or not. So you have full control over the Wi-Fi configuration that you provide the user, right? You can allow and disallow them to use Wi-Fi offloading. Offloading is simply that whenever there is a known Wi-Fi network in range or an open Wi-Fi hotspot in range that they can use, you can the data traffic can be offloaded to the Wi-Fi, not use the mobile operator data connection. You can disable that. You can also disable hotspot reporting. We do crowdsourcing of hotspots, open networks that devices can connect to. If you go on a Windows phone, you'll see if you go into Wi-Fi that you can find Wi-Fi networks in your neighborhood, and so you can walk through them, so to speak, because they're represented on a map. That's what we do with this crowd collection or this crowdsourcing of Wi-Fi hotspots. You can turn it off, and obviously turn off internet sharing over Wi-Fi too if you want to disable that. You have a question? Yes. So the MDM can provide to the device a number, one or multiple SSIDs, and limit access to Wi-Fi to those SSIDs, and also specify what authentication method needs to be used on these SSIDs, if it's a pre-shared key or if it's an IPTLS configuration or any of those can be specified. More questions? VPN. The MDM can again provision VPNs to the device and provide profiles, VPN profiles to the device, just like Wi-Fi profiles. Define which is the VPN server, authentication method, etc., on the VPN server. Provision those to the device and then can define what these profiles can be used for. What applications can use the VPN profile, and whenever there is a destination the user needs to go to, if the VPN needs to be used. Right? So the VPN is auto-triggered by an app or by a destination and configured by the MDM for the user, so the user doesn't have to think about how to use the VPN itself. Question? Which ones are available today? Let's talk about that first. So at this point in time, IPsec ICV2 is pretty much standard. If you use a, for example, Windows server with remote access, it supports IPsec ICV2. So we have tested with a few vendors, but we haven't tested with all IPsec ICV2 servers. But as it is a standard, it should work. In most cases, it's usually a question of configuring the firewalls, but it works in most cases. SSL VPN is a different story, obviously, because SSL itself, TLS, is very standard. Most SSL vendors add a control channel on top of that to do specific things for their gateways. And we have been working with a number of these SSL vendors, and at this point in time, we have available plugins or apps in the store for Checkpoint, SonicWall, and somebody was saying it? And Juniper, right. Those three are in the store. F5 was in the store for a moment and then disappeared and will come back later in the summer. As they are also doing some gateway updates they want to release in conjunction with that. And then we are working with a number of other vendors on enabling SSL VPN with them. And they also will be enabled during the summer. It's difficult for me to call out their names contractually, but you may know a few of those. You have a question?
This is
These plugins are specific for Windows Phone 8.1 or Windows 8.1. Yes, correct. And yes, kind of in a lockdown mode. Yes, correct. Yeah, question. Well, we will stay with plugins on modern platforms, right? If you look at a Windows Phone or a Windows 8.1 Pro or Enterprise type of system, it's a PC with a Win32 API environment and all that kind of legacy stuff that we have been in for years. And obviously, all these kind of VPN clients are available in that space. If we look at modern environment where we think about the universal Windows apps running on the Windows on the universal Windows runtime. In that environment, we are really focusing at the, providing the infrastructure and then plugins for SSL vendors as such. Yeah. Was there another question? Yes. We're working with more VPN vendors. Yes. Yes, it's a good question though. You obviously have a number of policies to enable and disable VPN. Also in the configuration of VPN, you can say when VPN is being used, don't use it over corporate Wi-Fi. If the device is already connected to Wi-Fi, don't use the VPN when they access a certain destination, right? Or don't turn on VPN, automatically do split tunneling when you're on the home network of a user. Those kind of elements are basically part of the VPN profile that you bring down to the device as such. And then obviously you can have these policies that are applied whenever the user is in a certain situation, such as he's traveling, he's roaming, don't use VPN over the mobile operator network at that point in time, because that's going to be a very costly affair, use or allow the user to use VPN over Wi-Fi only, for example, in that point in time. So next is app management. Just a quick example of VPN, maybe. If this is the right one. Yep, this one is a VPN needs attention. I have on the top side here, right, is my VPN access. I can automatically go to it. It needs attention, probably needs my, I don't know if the certificate has already come down. Let's see if it has. So this is a Microsoft VPN, right? RAS@microsoft.com, IKEV2 VPN. It uses a certificate. As you can see, it is my certificate that is probably going to expire on the 27th of this month. At this point in time, I can have details about the certificate, etc. So the MDM, on the MDM console side, you can get an inventory of what certificates are on the device as such, right? So you have a view. I can always add my actual Microsoft user account IDs here if I want a single sign-on experience from this VPN. Otherwise, there will be several servers at Microsoft that will prompt me for my user credentials whenever I try to access them through the VPN itself. And it's turned on to be automatically. And as you can see, there are a number of Microsoft domains. Whenever I access them, the VPN will automatically be fired up. I'm not going to show you the IP addresses as such. But you see that this is managed by the Microsoft environment. And let's just try quickly. But still, it's not in use. I'm going to open a browser session. I'm going to go to this Microsoft website, and it's prompting me for my user identity, right? I am connected, as you can see. But I didn't enter my credentials into the VPN client to do auto-authentication. I'm entering or I'm accessing a web server at Microsoft, and it prompts me for my ID, which I'm...
So the ID is being asked by the website?
Yes. Correct, yes. So this one, I probably already have my credentials in there, same secret passcode here, right? I also have the VPN on the right top side to show you when I use it. If I go to the browser and I open a new tab and I go to the same MS Travel website, the VPN should be connected now. Right, it opens this directory because here I already entered my credentials, and this is a Microsoft internal website, right? So as you can see, it's the same Windows Phone RAS at Microsoft.com, but as I entered my credentials before, I'm automatically authenticated against this web server or other application I use at Microsoft that prompts me for my credentials. The VPN client will automatically authenticate me against those applications, so I don't have to do it as a user. Okay, So it's very transparent to the user. Obviously, this is just an address I'm accessing, but it could be an application that accesses an application server behind the firewall in the same way. Well, the trigger for the VPN is or the domain name or the IP address that is specific to that resource that you access. Yes, you can create lists of those, right, that you provision to the device. At any point in time, you can change those and refresh them on the device so the device knows which domains to access. More questions? So app management. First things first, when we look at apps on Windows Phone 8.1, there is a difference with apps on Windows Phone 8.0. We still support all the apps that have been developed for 8.0, the what we call sometimes internally Silverlight apps for Windows Phone 8.0. Today, we also support universal apps for Windows, and we have the full Windows or the nearly full Windows runtime on Windows Phone 8.1, which actually means that you can develop an app for any Windows version and run it on this runtime. Right? You have to develop, you can now develop one app for Windows 8.1 Pro, Windows RT tablets, Windows Phone, and Xbox. And it will be one app. In the end, you will have to compile this app, basically still for two stores. One is the Windows Store, and the other one is the Windows Phone Store, as such. And the reason is because on Windows Phone, we have this dual persona, if you want. It's not really that, but you have Silverlight apps and runtime apps, and they are different, and the store supports both formats and not on Windows itself. So the stores are still different. They will eventually converge into one store for Windows, for all Windows devices. But today you can create universal applications for Windows itself. They use the same app model, they use the same tile model, they use the same push notification services, etc. It's all very converged, the same controls, etc. Obviously, the app will behave differently if it is used on a tablet versus a phone because the screen format is different, it's portrait versus landscape, etc. And you need to, in your design of the app, need to take account of that. And Visual Studio, the new release that I think was released yesterday, right? The official RTM of the new release of Visual Studio enables you to design applications for different screen formats on Windows, so that's very easy within your one application project to include all those designs so that the app knows how to behave on what type of device as such. Also, the cloud services, etc., as I said, are all the same. This is a big step because this allows developers now to develop applications for Windows, no longer an application for Windows Phone or Windows 8.1. They can now develop for Windows and have a much more a larger target area to target their applications to. In many cases, or in the store itself, you can see if an application, let's go to the store, and look for a remote desktop, for example. Right. You can see that an application is universal or not by looking at the little icon next to the store entry. You see that on the Microsoft Remote Desktop app, or the top app, there is a little PC screen and phone screen icon next to the app. And that shows that this app is a universal app that can run on Windows as well as on Windows Phone, right? The other one, the Office Remote app, is only a Windows Phone app, will only run on Windows Phone. So that, this is the way to see it in the store itself. For the user, they are able to, if the ISV or the developer, the publisher allows it, they will be able to buy an app and on phone and then have it on their tablet for free, right? For them, it's a one store kind of experience, if you want. So it's a buy once, run it on multiple devices set up as such. Obviously, when you are talking about line of business apps, you can develop your own line of business apps on the universal as universal Windows apps and distribute them to existing devices or new Windows Phone 8 devices with your MDM situation, right? As I showed in the, on the Microsoft, we have this company portal with all the apps in there. Those are hosted within the Intune environment and can be distributed and pushed to the device at any point in time. You can provision these applications at enrollment so that the user has the application they need. At that point in time, you can target users or applications based on users' roles and those kind of things, depending on how you have set up your mobile device management system. You can install them, update them, and remove them. And everything is silent to the user, right? The user has there's no interaction. If you don't prompt the user at an install for something, the install will be silent and in the background for the user. They won't really notice it as such. You can deep link into the Windows Phone Store for applications that are not yours, but that are public applications, right? Deep link into the store, for example, for downloading an Hertz app or a SSL plugin or any of those kind of things that are in the public store. You want to republish them to your own catalog. You can deep link into the store to do that. Can you do deep links and hide the store? Yeah, you could do that. First things first, if you say, I want to publish certain apps, you would have to whitelist those apps, right? So whitelist those apps. They can still see then the other apps and they can browse, but they cannot install them. If you really want to hide the store app, you can hide the store app with assigned access. Right? You can, and that could be the only thing you do with this assigned access is hide that store as such. Right? The reason why you have to whitelist and do assigned access is because if they receive an email with a deep link and you haven't whitelisted that app or you haven't used whitelisting, they can install that app even without seeing the store app itself. Right? The app will install. So you have to do you have to use combination of these things. The deep link will connect to the store and launch the install of the app.
But if the store is disabled, what app would it launch to get to
that? Then it would not be able to launch the app, right? If you use a policy disable store, it would not be able to launch the app. But you would not be able to deep link neither. Yeah.
But ideally, I want to prevent the store browsing, which then turns into I want this app.
Correct, yes.
So you can't do that. Can deep link with whitelisting without store?
Yes, but then you have to hide the store. You do whitelisting, deep linking, and hide the store app with assigned access. If you block the store completely, you cannot deep link.
Okay, so there's two policies, hide and block.
Yes. Some companies just want to block all apps from the store, and they use the block store policy, right? They just block the store by definition. They don't want any public apps. If you want certain of them, but you still want to hide the store, you need to use assigned access to hide the store and whitelist to enable the apps you want to be installed. Okay? You can also disable Internet Explorer and disable Developers Unlock. Which means that the MDM system can detect a developer's unlocked device and relock it. And every time the device, if the user would re-unlock it, the MDM would relock it. So it's a perpetual battle to lock the device if you want to do that as such. I did show you a company store itself, right, that we have at Microsoft. You can create your own using the MDM vendor's infrastructure to do that, to publish those apps that you want to make available. Moving on to asset management and inventory. Obviously, you can query the device. Query the device for all kinds of handset-related elements, like the hardware-related, the device name, OEM name, those kind of things. You can query it for Wi-Fi configuration that users are using and connecting to if you want to collect some of that information, and the OS configuration, right? Which policies are applied to this specific device, which apps are installed, list the certificates, those kind of things. And then also operator-related things, like which is the phone number, what's the roaming status, and what is the SIM card unique identifier, the IMSI, on the device. Users tend to remove SIMs and put other SIMs in phones and those kind of things because they have a better deal with the other SIM. So you can follow that if you want to be able to follow that. Yes? The inventory cycle, the inventory cycle is the cycle that you define the callback to be the callback cycle for the device. So at enrollment, you you configure a callback cycle, meaning the device is going to connect with the MDM server every so many minutes, hours, days, right? And that cycle is a cycle that the device will connect back to the MDM server and updates its configuration status to the MDM server.
So that's like what is the cycle, and then you have a different cycle for the
No, it's the same cycle. Yes. So at enrollment, you always enable the, or configure the device to have a callback time interval, right? That it reconnects with the MDM server without the MDM server trying to connect to the device. So it's automatically going to reconnect with the MDM server to keep a kind of, I am alive, this is what is happening on my device. This is what is my configuration, right? At that point in time, there is an MDM channel open between the server, and the server can obviously update policy on the device at that point in time, or install a new app, or update an app, or whatever needs to be done if you just work through the normal cycle. The server can also use a different a moment to connect to the device when you think there needs to be, I'm going to push out a new policy to all my Windows phones, right? And the MDM server is going to try to start connecting to all the Windows phones managed to update that specific policy at that point in time. It's not going to wait until the cycle completes as such. Does that answer your question? I don't know if I explained it very well. Does the device connect to the server at certain intervals to request new policies? Is that your question? Yes, it's the same cycle. All right, that's a good question. We do have geofencing on Windows Phone 8.1, right? We do not have policies that are geofenced enabled. What do I mean with that is that you cannot set a policy like disable camera when the phone is in this location, right? That would be executed locally on the phone. Meaning the phone would constantly poll for location and the MDM client would know about location and apply a policy locally. We do not have location conditional policies at this point in time. You can do geofencing, it's a circle area only. It's obviously battery intensive. Geofencing can be used to report back to a service, which could be an MDM service, right? So it could report back to the MDM server, and the MDM server could then say, hey, this device is in a location where camera needs to be disabled. I'm going to change the policy on the device, disable camera, right? It's, but it's not executed locally. It's executed through the cloud, and so it's more battery intensive to do that type of operation as such. You can always, your MDM vendor, like I think AirWatch, for example, with their MDM client, enables you location of the device and keeps track of devices, right, as an additional service. You can always enable those things and work through that system to enable that. Right. So yes, you can use geofencing, but we don't have geofenced enabled policies that automatically execute when the device is in a certain location. More questions about this? Obviously, you can remote ring, lock, and reset the password.
How about
remote check-in being? Yeah, so when you enroll the device at enrollment, you set a automatic check-in of the device, an interval that the device checks in with the MDM server. Oh, a user can, on the device itself, you can ask a user. To go into the device and do a check-in, right?
So how about for the admin?
No, you cannot remotely execute a command on the device. To be able to do some remote command execution on the device if the device is enrolled in an MDM?
Yeah. It sounds very simple and it sounds very, it sounds like a capability you wouldn't need. You would think, the device is automatically checking in. Why would you want to remotely check in on demand, right? But when it comes to troubleshooting it, and I'm not just talking about Windows devices, every single mobile platform that I've dealt with, it's just absolutely key.
Yeah. You can always fake a check-in, right? You can change a policy set on a device and change it immediately back, and it will check in twice. It's a good feedback, I think. And there's also asked for, if you do remote things, that you could also run scripts and those kind of things remotely on a device, because users do try and sometimes reconfigure their device that it becomes impossible to get them to fix it on their own, right? So running a script would be a good thing too, but not available today. And then unenrollment, you can obviously remotely wipe the device completely. You can do it with EAS or MDM, or you can unenroll a device through the MDM. You have policies to prevent unenrollment from the MDM so that the user cannot leave the MDM environment. Unenrollment is the same as an enterprise wipe. This one, right? And this is an enrolled device, right? I have these apps on my start screen. I have email, those kind of things. This is my bring your own, right? Let me show you quickly something where's the store? I'm a music lover and I love Spotify. And this is just an example that I use to demo, right? I'm going to install Spotify. And as you can see, I cannot install it, right? There's a policy for me by the MDM that prevents me. The Spotify is blacklisted for me, right? As a user, I hate that. So this is my own device. And I'm going to leave the MDM environment because I don't want to be managed if I cannot install Spotify. And in this case, I'm not going to refresh, but I'm obviously going to trash my relationship because of this. And if I go back now to my home screen, you'll see that my email disappears, my app disappear, right? My VPN is no longer configured. Documents that were in email, etc., are removed. Everything is removed from the device, no longer enrolled in the MDM environment, right? And all the company stuff disappeared. Apps, email, documents, contacts, what have you, certificates, VPN profiles, Wi-Fi profiles, they all have been removed from this device. I've done this now interactively on the phone. You can do it remotely too. If somebody's leaving the company and it's a BYOD, you unenroll from the MDM, and everything is removed from the device. You have still a view of what was on the device within your MDM system, but the device becomes an inactive device in your MDM system, no longer manageable by the MDM. You had a question?
Yeah.
1 minute. Question?
So I'm
What it does not delete is, but there may be Twitter information in the Twitter app that is not being deleted, that is work-related for some people. If you have a PDF viewer, and there are lots of PDFs, and the viewer caches the PDF documents that are open through email, that cache will not be removed neither. All the rest, if it's a consumer app that the user installed on their own, Facebook, those kind of things, all that will not be deleted, right? And music are not deleted. Photos is usually the big problem, right? People take pictures within their environment. There's an app for that, and you could use apps to do it instead of pictures. Pictures could be an issue. You had a question, sir?
Yes, I do.
You're coming to the microphone, right?
Regarding that question about unrolling remotely, if you set the interval for check-in to be 4 hours, mm-hmm. and somebody's leaving right now and he's checked in 15 minutes ago, do you have to wait 4 hours to enroll?
No, that's the way it was in Windows Phone 8.0. It's no longer that way. We use cloud push services to reach out to the device and unroll immediately, right? So if the device is connected to the internet, the NVM server will find it and push out the unenrollment or the wipe device if it's a full wipe immediately.
Thank you. That was a challenge for us.
Yeah, it was a gap in Windows Phone 8.0. Okay. I understand. Yeah. Question? Let's take it offline. I have a question outstanding within Microsoft about a tool that is available to log what's going on the device, and that would help you when there's something wrong in configurations. And we're talking about it, but I cannot tell you more details about it. But there is a tool like that exists and that could be used, and we're talking about how to release it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically done in 2 minutes. I talked about all of this. You have the slides. You can download them. You can reread them if you want. I'm quickly going to finish with Exchange Server support. We do support S/MIME within Outlook natively. There's no additional install of applications to be done to support S/MIME on Windows Phone. It's supported on the native Outlook environment. Obviously, you need to work only with Exchange Server. It works only with Exchange Server. You don't see any slides. It works only with Exchange Server 2007 SP2 and higher. That's what we have tested it with. It's a flexible implementation. Obviously, the user needs to have the certificates on the device, and the user needs to be connected to and configured on the Exchange Server to be using S/MIME, obviously. But once that happens, the device will automatically be able, the user will be able to sign, encrypt, sign and encrypt, or none of those. It's a flexible implementation. Obviously, Exchange Active Sync policies can require the user to behave in a certain way. Authentication certificates can be used or distributed to SCEP. Encryption certificates, however, have to be done through a specific application that you develop to retrieve the encryption certificates from the database and put them on the devices, since you have to distribute it over multiple devices. A virtual smart card is supported with S/MIME. So making the first of all the certificates non-exportable, and then making the requiring the user to enter a PIN before they can use encryption certificates to encrypt the email as such. And then there is a set of policies that are specific to EAS, so a lot more policies, I would say. Most of them have been available or are available in MDM2. Obviously, S/MIME policies are only available in Exchange and need to be set in Exchange. If your MDM supports a connection to a CAS server, they can set these policies through the MDM, so you can track that through the MDM, but the Exchange server needs to know about this S/MIME policies, obviously, because Exchange server handles the email. And then new, I think, is the ability for disabling USB sync, and also new is the ability to limit the amount or the time of policy, the duration of policies that are on the device, only the last 7 days, for example, instead of unlimited. So you can limit how much email is on the device, as well as the size of the email that gets synchronized. If people are traveling a lot, you can set the limit low so that they only get the header of the email. They can see, hey, this is an important email. I'm going to click on it, and then the device will download the full email for them. So they don't get all the email, and they can quickly discard email they don't need to read while they are traveling. That's also important. It's also important in Europe, where there's a lot of roaming with all these mobile operators. It's very important for limiting the size or the amount of email that is set on the device itself. So a lot more EAS policies here, and obviously full wipe through EAS remains available. Selective wipe is MDM only. I'm done in time, and I did a number of demos. I hope they were good, and I hope you can all evaluate my session and give me good scores. That's what I'm looking for. Anyway, all these MDM vendors here are supporting AirWatch, Interseat if you do smart card, or virtual smart card, Sophos, Mobile Iron, Intune, Soti, Symantec, Citrix, all supporting or will be supporting in the next few months. By June, most of them will have released an 8. Or a release that supports 8.1. For mobile device management at this point in time. MAS360, I forgot to call them out. FiberLink, IBM FiberLink. All right?
What about Xamarin?
Xamarin, what are they doing? It's a good question, it's a developer question actually. Xamarin extends C# development, .NET development across multiple platforms. So you can develop applications in C# for Windows 8.1, Windows Phone 8.1, but also for iOS and for Android. Right? So you develop one app across all these platforms. Obviously, when it's an Android or iOS device, the final stage you will have to compile using the native tools to compile those apps for those platforms. But they allow you to develop C#-based, .NET-based applications across Windows and competing platforms. For having native applications. Yeah?
Just a general question about IRM for on-premise. Is there a scenario for IRM for on-premise with VPN and CCA?
I'm not sure I understand the question. IRM is rights management. We support it in Windows Phone. I don't know if you can have IRM on-premise. That's something to ask the IRM team. I have only seen cloud-based solutions, right? Internet-based solutions. No, it does. No, it does, yes. But your rights management service is going to be an internet service. That's what I was referring to. Your rights management service is always published on the internet, and not just on your behind the firewall, right? But it supports Exchange Server and SharePoint Server behind the firewall. And then if you use VPN to access those, obviously IRM will be respected on Windows Phone. Well, that's the IRM infrastructure configuration. You will really have to ask the IRM guys about that. That's not my specialty, so I would be, I don't know what the expression is, but I would be telling you some BS, right? All right, thank you very much.